Tell me something good. Yeah. What up, y'all? Person of interest. We're back. Can you believe we are at the end of June? Freaking what? Oh my God. Coming off of Mental Health Month and everything else that has followed, let's have some fun. It's hot fun in the summertime. Summer is here. It is hot. Let's do this. This next blondie is Kelly Collette. She's a professional comedian. People have always mistaken us for each other, at least they have recently, and we actually just met when we recorded this podcast in my house. She was the very first one that I did in my home, so the levels on the mics, you're going to have to bear with me because we did the best we could. And also, don't cancel us. We have a darkly, supremely dark sense of humor here that does shine through in a lot of this podcast, and I hope you enjoy, and please just know that we are two women just having fun, and that comedy can still be funny, and things that are offensive can still be comedy. I mean, that's just what it is. We're sticking strong in our guns here, but we have a blast. Kelly Collette is a professional comedian. You can find her at Kelly Collette on Instagram, and her art. She's an amazing painter as well. That's at kelly.canvas. And her website to book her or find out where she's going next, that's kellycollettecomedy.com. Enjoy this brave, very, very hilarious blondie, Kelly Collette. Let's go. So then, now let's go again.
Hello, hello. Hi.
Oh my God.
We did it.
Now we are perfect.
Synergy.
Okay. So tell me a little bit more about, I love when you say studio. It's really just this.
I like it. It's more buttons than I would know what to do with. I feel like you're like on an Apollo mission. That's what it looks like. One wrong move.
Trying to figure it out.
Trying to.
Well, so tell me about, what was your podcast called and everything?
It was called Living My Fest Life.
Oh, I love that.
And it was about festivals, fairs, events and experiences, everything from the nationally known to the local and obscure. That was my tag. And I just wanted to like cover like everything from like, you know, the Missouri Blueberry Pie Festival to like Holly and, you know, the running of the bulls. Like, I just wanted to know, like, what starts these traditions and why they do it and, like, what your local hometown festival is. Like, what people grew up going to.
Okay.
I love stuff like that.
All right, I'm getting comfortable here. So did you, like, ever go to the Renaissance Festival or anything?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love the Renaissance Festival.
I love a Ren Fair. Yeah. I love looking at the people. And then looking at the other people, you know what I mean? There's two types. There's the watchers and some of them watching us. Yeah.
I like the big turkey legs you get.
Yeah.
God, I'm such a glutton. Like,
no, the food is half of the best part. Like, I saw someone eating like cheese out of a bread bowl and I was like, well, clearly I need one of those. And it was like cold and it wasn't what you thought it was going to be. It just looks very good. You get two bites in and you're like, I'm done with this one.
The first time I ever went to the Renaissance Festival, I was a little kid. And, I remember I had this like outfit that I really loved that was like this cute plaid skirt. Even though I went to Catholic school, mm-hmm. It was pretty much like a Catholic school uniform, but like outside of school.
Yeah.
Why I loved it. And I wore it so I wasn't wearing pants or anything. I had bare legs. I went to like a friend of my mom's got married there, which is like bizarre. That's like the only person I've ever known to get married there in my
life.
That's
like a whole thing though.
I know.
It's like an underground culture.
They were into it. And all of a sudden, it dropped like 30 degrees, and it was freezing. And then the whole time, I was just miserable and really, really cold. And then
you got the full William Wallace experience.
Yes!
Though. You got to know what it was like to not have pantaloons in those times
totally
protect you.
And then my mom like left because I was cold. She was just like, "You'll be fine." I don't know.
Just start running some laps.
Make it work.
Do a lap.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I saw somebody in my school came to school with. Like elf ears on.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, oh, I went to the Renaissance Fair this weekend. And I was like, yeah, but that was this weekend. Like, leave that in the past. Yeah.
So did you go to, okay, so I used to go to like festivals a lot back in the day. Music festivals, I feel like they were my life for a long time. Like when everyone was graduating college and like starting off in real jobs, I was like,
you're like, I'm
places.
Going on tour.
Yes.
They're like, with who? You're like, whoever.
I know. But it was never about like actual partying, even though a lot of that stuff happens when you go to those things. But it was just about like absolutely being the biggest music nerd ever and being so excited to see these bands and like actually getting really into it and whatnot.
See, I feel like people who are into those things always know of a band that I've never heard of, and I'm so embarrassed about how not cool I am to not know who the Ringling drummers are or whatever. And
I feel like back in the day I was really into that, mm-hmm. And now I'm not. Like, I don't, now I could care less. But
I didn't even know who Doja Cat was until...
Yo, I didn't really either.
Yeah, like, people are like, I know, you know... I just feel like everybody's punking me when they give me some of these names.
Right?
And I'm like, yeah, I don't know anybody.
I know. I don't want to talk about how I really feel about a lot of modern pop culture because that will just age me too much.
Oh,
and then
oh.
I might get fired, so.
No.
My gosh.
You're like, I have to be up on the times.
So. But Kelly Collette, so where are you from?
I am from here, born and raised, never lived anywhere else. So that I've been places, which makes me feel better.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, I've traveled a lot. Cost of living here is very cheap, but I always feel silly when I say born and raised here because it just feels like you're supposed to get out of your hometown.
I'm born and raised here.
Okay.
I mean, I left a bunch, but like, whatever.
Yeah, you come back. Yeah.
There's one thing I realized through traveling a lot is that life is the same everywhere you go.
Your problems follow you guys.
Everywhere you go.
You can't run from them.
No, but I mean, like, people are the same, but it was like fun back in the day. I don't
yeah.
know. And so what part of town are you from?
So I'm from, I don't know why I'm laughing so hard. It's always fun to talk about this. I'm from a very small town called Green Hills. I don't know.
Yeah, dude, I'm from White Oak, so
okay.
I'm very familiar with Green Hills.
Okay, yeah.
Not far. Hop, skip, and a jump from the kind of west side.
Yeah, so we were the original Green Hills Pioneers. It was a green belt town built during the Depression that was supposed to be a urban utopia. They were supposed to mix a bunch of people from different ethnic backgrounds and income levels together in this small town. It was like a social experiment.
How do you know all this?
Because I grew up there. So they had like a little community center and they're like, you guys don't even know how special this town is. I was like, why? Because we got benches. Like, why? Why are we so special?
We got benches.
Yeah. And then I like grew up in this town and I grew up hearing about this like tall tale about how it was supposed to be this like dun 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 dun, you know, like we have a barbershop and a library.
You know all the tunes to that very well.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, Mr. Sandman. I'm just my one man a cappella group over here. But I actually I applied for like the NBC Writers Program last year during the quarantine or whatever, and I was like, oh, what? You have to have two original pilots, and I was like, I'm gonna write one about Green Hills. So I did all this like research about it too.
Awesome.
So that's another reason, because I was like,
how did the pilot thing go?
Oh, I mean, I didn't get it.
Yeah, but how's that experience making it and everything?
It was humbling because I don't know, like thousands of people apply and there's all these message boards and Facebook groups and there's people who are trying to sell you like classes on how to write your pilot or how to submit it and all these things. And I'm more of like I'll try and figure it out on myself kind of person.
Yeah.
So wrote this whole thing. It was supposed to be like this comedy about a small town. And then in the middle of it, I was like, they're going to go back in time. And then I was like, oh no, I wrote a sci-fi. This is not what NBC wants. So now I'm like watching the sci-fi channel constantly. I'm like, maybe this might fit in. Yeah, I don't know. I just, it just took a weird corner turn. And I was like,
well, that's where like creativity goes.
Points for creativity there.
So being a female comedian, you've been a professional female comedian for a long time, like 10 years?
11. Yeah, going on 11 or 12.
So amongst that, you're also an artist and you do eyebrows and cosmetic stuff. You do a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, that was just recent. That was like a quarantine, like, I don't have work to do.
Yeah.
So my friend's like, hey, will you learn how to tattoo eyebrows with me? And I was like, hell yeah, let's do that.
Hell yeah. How's that going?
Good. I do it like 2 or 3 days a week. And it's really fun because people come in and then they leave all happy. And I'm like, I did that.
I'll have to start. I'll have to go to you. My eyebrow game is weak. It's always confusing. And I can't, like most things in life, I fuck it up halfway through. And
eyebrows
then I'm like,
are hard.
I don't know.
They're very hard. Most people, like, we all have a little asymmetry in our face, too. And then I have to, like, point it out to people. I'd be like, no one's perfect. Listen, they're not, sisters, not twins. But eyebrows are hard. One always kind of, it's the Mary-Kate and Ashley.
Yeah. Oh,
you gotta let Mary-Kate do her thing, right?
You gotta let her just kill herself. It's gonna happen.
Be her own person, yeah.
So, But so when you like turned it into a sci-fi or whatnot, do you feel like that kind of happens in your comedy, that it kind of like will take a left turn?
Yes, I do that a lot. Yeah. So I have a very like, I like weird alternative stuff. Like when I listen to comedians, like I like Maria Bamford and Paul F. Tompkins and these comedians that are a little bit more alternative, mm-hmm. as opposed, like I also like the John Mulaney's and yeah. the, you know, Eliza Schlesinger's and the, in, you know, the people who are more like what they call mainstream comedy. So it's what I like, and then I try and merge the two. So I'll do a bunch of like jokes that are, you know, very either self-deprecating, or I'll do something like just, you know, typical setup punchline.
Yeah.
And then I'll just throw like a super weird tag in, like, hey, you guys ever eat your twin in the winter? Like, just like I'll try and like work some weird shit in there, and by the end I'm like, I just want to see if they are digging that, because if they start responding to the weird stuff,
uh-huh.
I have a whole like second tier of jokes that I'll be like, okay, let's go into the weird stuff then. But if yeah. they're like not digging the like breadcrumbs I'm throwing out, I'll just stick to like the normal.
If you could, if you could choose to the more crowd pleasing, if you could choose like either way, do you prefer to go down the weird rabbit hole?
Oh my
hole?
God, absolutely. When I make when I make a obscure pop culture reference and everybody mm-hmm. in the audience gets it, I'm like, here are my people. You yes. guys, you guys want to talk about Elijah Wood when I was 8 years old? Let's do, you know what I mean? Like, do you guys want to talk about this weird commercial that we saw? Or like, I don't know. I just love an obscure pop reference. So when I throw it out there and people respond, I'm like, oh my God.
Oh my gosh.
I'm home.
It's so awesome. So we, I guess the first time I really met you or knew who you were was because a hacker made. Okay, this is what I was like. Do you think Facebook just made it, or like did a human actually make this? They used my pictures in your face, in your name?
No, my name. Yeah, it was Kelly Collette, and then it was pictures of Natalie. And I was like,
what?
Yeah. Everybody's like, everybody was sending it to me. Were they sending it to you?
Yes.
And they're like, this person either requested me or I saw them as a friend. And I was like, oh, she's cute. I'll take it.
Same. Yeah. It was totally bizarre, because then this one I thought it was creepy, because all of these people were messaging me and I was like, number one, this chick's dope. And also, you guys know her too. We had like so many mutual friends.
And so I was like, how did I not know you already?
Right?
Yeah.
And then you do stand up. And I used to do stand up a little bit. Like when I was in LA, I was doing stand up.
Oh my gosh. I didn't know none of that.
I was never, I mean, I guess I was paid for it once.
There you
so
go.
So that
you're,
does
you're
mean
a
I'm professional.
Comic. Mm-hmm.
But I was, it was never my, I don't know, I did it a lot, and I hate to even say that I was a comedian, because that's not, I did not go through the hustle and bustle that everybody else goes through all the time.
You didn't
know?
Get sexually harassed, you didn't get...
Oh, yeah, nah, but like most of the, okay, most of the comedian men, I was just like, I can't take it fucking what you're saying seriously, like, please, I got you, go drink another, I don't know, anyway, yeah, so then when I was like, oh my gosh, she's a comedian, and she has like blonde hair and blue eyes, we look similar. And
we
I was
do
like,
look similar.
And I was like, somebody did research, I feel like.
Right.
That's I was like, this is like too close. This is weird.
And I think the photo was of you in a Reds jersey. And I used to work for the Reds on the rally pack. So I was like, who is this person? What is their, like, I don't, like, every time I get a bot following me, I'm like, it's a stalker. It's someone weird. Mm-hmm. Like, and people are like, it's just a bot. They follow a lot of people. And I was like, no, this is so specific.
Okay. Can I ask you about bots in general?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I'm always like, my Instagram game is like so bad. And I've never like it's like not growing or mm-hmm. whatnot, you know? And I lose followers all the time.
I do too.
And I'm just curious about it. Like, it's not my main goal. Like, mm-hmm. it's just, I think Instagram is really fun to like, I use stories as like a perform, like I just make funny shit. Like
and
I,
you throw stuff out there and you're like,
yes.
People responded to that. I might want to write that down. Yeah.
I just kind of like, yeah. I don't really think about it. But I am curious, like through work and everything, we got to grow following, you know, there's like that kind of underlying pressure. No one will say it to your face, but it's like, yeah, it's like important.
Yeah.
Anyway. And so I asked this opinion, I asked people's opinions about it who are like in media or whatnot. And everyone is always like, those are just bots that you're losing. Don't worry about it. I'm like, yeah, but also then who are the people actually following you? Like, what's the difference? You guys, you can't just like remove responsibility from one side of the coin. Like, you know what I mean?
I have no idea what the analytics, like that situation Same. Is. All I know is I posted that I got vaccinated. I lost like 10 followers. And I was like, this has to be like, that has to be like people who are anti-vax. Like I always, I overthink everything. And I'm always like, nothing's chance. It's all something I did. So Yeah. I don't know about the bot thing. There is the, like, the analytics button that tells you, like, what demographic is following you. And I've always had, like, a 60-40 women to men, which I'm always like, okay, so, like, I know. And that's the same with, like, my, when I do stand up, like, I always have the women coming to me like, I really liked that. And I was like, yeah, it's for you, girl.
Yeah.
But, like, the rest of the pie chart, I don't, they're like age range and location, and you got this many followers this day and you lost this many this day. And I'm like, eh.
Right.
I
feel like in 2020, I lost so many. Every time I would post anything that was pertaining to what was going on in the world.
Yeah.
It was like slicing. Excuse me. Anyway.
I saw, like, you know when you do your, like, your year-end wrap-up? Some people do that. It's, like, your top nine or whatever.
I don't think it's, yeah.
It's always, like, selfies for girls. It's always, like, the most liked photos is, like, your face. You did it, girl. It's your face.
We take a lot of selfies. I'm like, every photo that I post, though, is, like, just of me, so.
Well, I took a class. It was, like, how to grow, like, through stand, like, there's this girl, her name's Liz Neely. She's a really great comedian, and she goes viral, like, on a lot of stuff because she is hustling with these, like, getting out, like, clips with the words printed on them, and you share your stand-up that way.
She blonde chick?
No, she has long, dark, curly brown hair. She's from New York. But she did this, like, little thing, and she's like, you gotta make a clip, and it's gotta have a controversial caption.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
that's huge.
Yeah, and then she's like, then you gotta do a 3-to-1, like, you give out 3 jokes and then you ask them to come to your show. And it was like all this, like, scientific method, and I'm just like, but sometimes I'll just, like, get a cute pedicure, and I'm like, people need to see this, and I'm just, like, totally ruining, I don't know what I'm doing. It's a lot of work to, like, be very calculated, and I feel like you can tell when people are super calculated and you're, like, trying too hard, unfollow, you know?
Well, I feel like it's, like, the difference between, like, a business account, like, is this your professional account where, like, you are trying to make it in media, you're trying to make it in the public, so you need to, like, you need to put a lot of thought behind it, and it is part of the job, or you're just like, this is my life.
That's why social media managers and marketing and stuff, like, all these girls are going to school. Like, every time I see someone's, like, LinkedIn profile or, like, some page on something, it's always like, I'm a social media manager. I'm like, that wasn't even a thing when we were in college.
Social media didn't really exist.
No, and definitely you didn't know how to manage it. Like, I went to school for public relations, and like, our media was like, send the press release. Make sure it has 4 ampersands on the back, and you send that out, and then the media is going to pick it up. That's what you do. Like,
yo, can I? Okay, so I majored in communications, marketing /PR was the thing.
First of all, that's what all the hot girls did. We were all in the marketing PR.
Can't really say it was a hot girl. It was definitely like a linebacker.
Well, definitely. There was really like know. 2 dudes in my class that were just like, I just came here because I heard that Bronson's class had all these sorority girls in it or whatever.
Definitely. And but I feel like nothing that I even learned is even applicable to life now.
And I learned nothing. I mean, I had a couple teachers that, like, I don't know what they were grading on. I still don't know what case.
But then in the same regard, though, you can say that that's kind of how, like, you would say social media is now. Like, that's it. It's like the kind of the same thing of, like, we learned how to talk, maybe. Like, I, even having a marketing and PR degree, I never learned how to make a press release.
Nope. I think I did it once.
And I still don't know how to use an Excel spreadsheet. Literally don't know how to do it.
I took Excel in high school, and I've completely forgotten it. Like, I was trying to enter my gas mileage the other day, and I just got so, I felt like, you know, Derek Zoolander slapping my computer. I was like, I don't know what is happening.
When he's a monkey.
Yeah.
So when did you start doing comedy?
So I started in 2009.
Wow.
May of 2009.
And what was your big, what was your beginning process like?
I just started writing, like, observational stuff. And I remember, like, that's how long ago. I can tell you exactly 2000. I had a lot of jokes about Benihana and a lot of jokes about Paris Hilton. I don't remember what they were at the time. I think it was something about Paris Hilton putting her hand on the grill and being like, that's hot or something. Like, just something so stupid. Mm-hmm. But, like, when you're reaching for 5 minutes. And when you first start comedy, you don't know who you are.
Oh, my God.
And
And also, like, you really don't know what you're doing.
No.
I feel like everyone looks back to their beginning and they're like, Jesus.
Yeah. All I know is I packed the audience and I told my friends they had to promise to laugh. And once you get that first laugh, you kind of, like, relax and sit in it.
For sure.
And you're like, Okay, that wasn't
that.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you. I didn't bomb. And of course, that could have been all set up. But I did have a bunch of the comedians come up to me after and was like, that was your first time? That was great. Why don't you come back next week?
Yeah.
And then I had one say, yeah, come back next week and bring all your hot friends. Yeah. So I was like, okay, they like me in my comedy or my friends. Either way, I'm in. Like, I feel good about this. So
was
I just
this
kept going.
Go Bananas?
Yeah.
Me too. I did the same exact process in 2010. And well, great. Now I know. Maybe it was just because I've been telling everyone my whole life, like, after I did stand up for the first time, like, they asked me to come back. So, like, I'm really good at it.
Yeah. No, it's actually encouraging because sometimes
it really was. Because they didn't say to everyone that night,
they
though.
Did not. They don't say that to everybody. Sometimes they're like, okay, smell you later.
Yeah. So that was back when Alex Stone was there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
dude. I actually went to elementary school with him.
No
which
way.
Was really funny because in our little yearbook photo, we're in our kindergarten yearbook photo, we're right next to each other. And I had, like, seen him during comedy, and I was like, hi, you might not remember me. But then I sent him the picture. He's like, oh, my God,
yeah.
You were, like, next to me in kindergarten.
He's so great. Yeah. I, like, yeah, so that's where was this?
When was this or where?
In Greenhouse.
Beechwoods Elementary School.
Beechwoods.
Yes, baby.
Nice. Wait, was Jennifer Kuhn in your class as well?
I don't think so. It does sound familiar.
She's my best friend, and I thought.
Did she go there?
I think
so. Did she go to Wynwoods? I went to Wynwoods first.
I think she did.
Yeah.
And we're at the same age, right?
Yeah.
So I think so.
Anyway. Yeah.
Well, that's great. Yeah, that was a really great, great time in life. So what happened from there?
So they used to have this thing called rooftop comedy. Rooftop mm-hmm. comedy used to record a bunch of videos at comedy clubs, and then they would put them up on their site. So mm-hmm. it was great. We had this, like, permanent webcam in the back of the club that would put all your stuff online. And sometimes they would partner with TV stations or some stuff, and they'd be like, hey, tell us what comedians, or like they'll be like promoting a festival, and they'd be like, hey, Rooftop, select some comedians to come to our festival. So Rooftop really liked me, thank God, and they put me up for like CMT's Next Big Comic, and then San Francisco Sketch Fest. I got to go out there after
awesome.
I submitted a tape.
Also, what's CMT?
Country music television.
Oh, for real. Okay.
Oh,
CMT.
Yeah.
That's
CMT. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And I was like 3 years in, and I remember very much being happy. And I remember telling one Cincinnati comedian in particular, and he was like, fuck you. And he meant it. He was pissed. He was just like, you don't, like, in his head, I did not deserve it. He was not happy for me.
Yeah.
And so
you want to blast his name right now?
Yeah,
please tell me.
But that was the first, because before then it was like, comedians, we love each other. We all share this dream.
Cutthroat.
And that was the first time I was like, oh, this isn't a team sport. Like, some people see you as competition. Like, they are generally not happy for you, which I think I would have been happy for anybody. But that was my first, like, oh, mm-hmm. this is a business where
we need to go back to that. Let's go back to this. But also, do you feel that that's, I mean, I feel like a big, like, that reason right there maybe is what holds me back from a lot of things in life. Like,
yeah.
I could have maybe been way more successful if I was more of a bitch about all of this.
I've turned.
Or if I was more conniving a little bit, or, you know?
Yeah. No. I
guess I don't play the game. I'm just like.
The game is terrible. It hurts your innards and your brains. it hurts your heart. Because, yeah, a lot of things are political, who you know, what you can do to get ahead. And then there's also the fun aspect. So it's like mm-hmm. you kind of got to marry the two together. Or else you're just going to hate it. If you're just goofing off all the time, not getting any work, then you're just going to feel like a crap comedian. But if you're just business all the time, you're not reaping all the benefits of, like, what this lifestyle could be and the fun of being that. So
yeah. Well, so you are 3 years on CMT, and the next big thing?
Oh, yeah. It was called CMT's Next Big Comic, and it was, like, 2.5 years in. It was just like an online, like, showcase that
awesome.
Like you get voted through to the next round. But there were, like, some really good, like, Shane Moss was on it. I remember being like, I love Shane Moss. Like, I'm in the same thing as he is in. And I think the winner got, like, an album.
Cool.
And so I made it to, like, the semifinals, and then bye-bye. But after that, like, I did Lucille Ball Comedy Festival, and I got to be on their album recording.
Cool.
With, like, it was like 4 or 5 years in, and then they, like, you know, Lucille Ball is from Jamestown, New York, which mm-hmm. is like a small town, and every year they have this giant Lucy Fest, and then they have they just built something called, like, the National Comedy Center, the National mm-hmm. Comedy Museum there, and they Yeah, because of the trucks are backing up. So they have, like, comedians come. I mean, they had me back 2 years after that to MC, like, this world record thing that they were putting on. And the headliner was Bob Newhart. So I got to go meet Bob Newhart.
And who's Bob Newhart again?
Bob Newhart is, he was like the Jerry Seinfeld of the 60s, 70s. He was like.
The name is familiar.
Yeah, he was like a clean comic. Everybody was stealing his act. He had his own TV shows. You might have seen him on Nick at Night. But he's just a very funny comic that's been around forever. Yeah. So meeting him was like, it was like meeting the Joan Rivers or like, you know, like a, yeah, like a Don Rickles or, yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it was very fun. So like through these little things, like I kind of tried to, I still felt like an imposter every step of the way because I think that guy planted it in my head, like, you don't deserve this. Yeah. You're too, like, and then when someone tells you you don't deserve that, you really do like kind of internalize it and you're like, oh, maybe I don't. And, you know, I would deal with, like, some local people being like, well, you're just getting it because you're a girl. Like, people would say that. And I'm like, I feel like girls don't get stuff.
Right?
Yeah.
That's stuff like they don't know. But I feel like there's a fine line between in that as well. To be like, you know what? If I'm going to use this opportunity that I have to leverage even more. Like, I'm sorry. Or, like, I was born. I can't control that.
Right. I wouldn't have known if I got it. I wouldn't have known if I got it just because I'm a girl because I've never been a guy. So I don't know.
Yeah.
If, you know. But, yeah. So there's been a lot of that, like, internalization in the head being like, sometimes I feel like I still get stuff and I'm like, I feel like I don't deserve this or I'm an imposter. And I'm like, dude, you've been doing it for 11 years. Like, you can cut yourself a break.
I definitely think you should cut yourself a break. Yeah. And imposter syndrome sucks. And I feel like we all experience it in some way or form. But also, do you think that there's like a part of comedy and performance that's like, I kind of need a little bit of self-loathing to like motivate me.
Gosh.
Like, that's like where a lot of the comedy comes from.
Yes, we're all internal sad crying clowns. Yes. When it comes down to the end of it, we're all.
That's why, like, you never marry a comedian.
No,
okay,
don't.
You never date a comedian.
Yeah.
Like a male comedian. Us chicks, for sure.
We're fine.
But like
we're
men
fine.
Comedians, hell no.
We're all seeking something. We need that validation for sure.
It's
with
true.
The, like, laugh at my pain or whatever. But like, yeah, you have to kind of have those, and that's why bombing is so important, especially when you start off as a comic, because the first couple times you kill, you're like, I got this, I'm ready for my special. And the first time you bomb, you're like, I never want to feel this bad again.
God.
And then you're just you're like, I can't have that be the last time. So you're chasing the highs constantly.
Tell me your first bombing story or one that sticks out in your mind.
I remember one time I was getting heckled. The first time I ever got heckled, I didn't know how to handle it. And I was like, please stop it, sir. Like, I was just being polite. Like, and I just was like, you have to, like, because you don't have the confidence to be like, no, fuck you. Because you need the audience to be on your side. And at that point, I was like, I don't know if they're on my side or not.
Yeah.
And you can't, like, start berating the audience if you don't know they're going to, like, not retaliate. So I remember that. And I just spiraling into like forgetting my stuff and just being so insecure, and they could smell it. Oh, they could smell it like sharks, and they're like,
It's like my stomach hurts watching this.
Yes.
Like that's what it was.
Yeah.
I'll have those moments. Luckily, the first time I ever did stand up, the very first time I ever go bananas, my parents came and they both heckled me because both of them also paid attention. Like, freaking, it's crazy. So it was like, I'm on stage and I'm still fighting for attention.
Yes,
oh
come
my
on,
God.
You guys.
But so because of that, they heckled me so much that I like played it off well. But the first time I ever bombed was at Go Bananas, and I had like my best friend's parents. Who, like, she didn't live here. She like, lived in Colorado or whatever, but, like, her parents came to see me with, like, their family.
Yeah.
And then I had a bunch of people from the bar where I worked come see me for the first time. And I, like, drew a mustache on my face on stage and thought it was funny, and it was, like, the worst set I've ever done in my life.
Why
totally
am I
bombed.
Thinking I maybe have seen someone with a mustache on their face on stage? Maybe I saw you one night.
I drew it on stage while I was on stage.
Oh,
and
no.
Then,
definitely didn't see
and
that.
Then afterwards, and I at the time, I used to do it so often that it was like perfect. Perfect. And I used like a really thick Sharpie.
It's not like eyebrows. You're like, yep, I can get a mustache.
I was like, no big deal. Then I went out afterwards. I got real drunk. And finally, when we were drunk enough, everyone was like, No.
Oh my gosh.
No.
Bombing in front of people that you know is the worst feeling in the entire world. It doesn't matter if it's a room full of strangers. I'm like, and something makes you so nervous. Like when people come to see you, and especially when they pay to come see you, you feel this like I feel like I'm hosting a bridal shower every time someone comes in. I'm like, are you guys okay? Do you have drinks? Like, I'm just like, they're like, you should be getting ready for the show. I'm like, no, I got to make sure everybody has their seat and coordinated and that they know that, like, hey, I'm going to try some new stuff out tonight, so it might not be my best ever. Like, I have to preface everything just because I have that insecurity of, like, people I know.
No, I know. Do you still do anything like that now? Like, so I know in COVID you started doing the backyard sets.
And yeah.
Are there any tickets for the most recent one?
Come on over.
Because I missed the last.
Yeah, it's May 1st. I'm trying to hit it before cicadas emerge from their murder pods or whatever. Yeah. I'm excited for it, but I think competing with that sound outside might be a little. I'm like, they're having sex in the background. No one can hear the jokes. I totally lost track of the question.
Your backyard comedy. So you started doing that in 2020.
Yes.
Okay.
As a response of like, hey, clubs are closed. None of us have work. I have a big backyard. I have a outdoor speaker. I'm like, what if we just invite our neighbors over and we make them laugh? Like, that's going to make the comedians feel good, and that's going to make the community feel good. Yeah. And we can social, like, everybody had to wear their masks even while seated. And I'm like, you know, bring your own
Chappelle
beer.
Style,
very Chappelle. And then Chappelle started doing it, and everybody's like, we're going to go there. And I'm like, yeah, that's, I would do, I, you know, I did it too. So, but on a low key scale, like, we had some nice headliners come through, and everybody had a really good time. And like, I only had one neighbor that he would just like peek over the fence like Wilson and like shake his head disapprovingly. And I'm like, all right, Ted, we'll be done in an hour. Yeah, exactly. But the rest of the neighbors were like, this is great. Like, let's keep doing it.
So tell me more about, so you've been like on the road, a working comedian for 10 years. So that is like so rad.
I did have a job for a very long time, and I was one of those comedians that was halfway in, halfway out, which other comedians sometimes would like, oh, you're not in skin in the game like the rest of us. And I was like, I have a car I have to pay for.
Yeah.
Like, you guys are okay. Like, you guys are all dudes sharing an apartment together. I'm like a lady and I have other things going on. And like, so they would like compare and contrast like everybody's like journey and be like, well, you're not all in because you still have this job on the back burner. So I quit my job on the back burner and then COVID happened too. So, but this year has been like one of the best like years for traveling.
What was your job on the back burner?
I did insurance. I was a safety inspector.
Wow.
I know. I would go and like evaluate sprinkler systems in commercial kitchens and slip, trip and fall hazards. And I was super professional. I was like this big safety nerd.
How did you get into that?
So I graduated with that public relations degree, which was bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I need a job. And the only thing hiring in like 2008 was like these big companies. They were like, we have two positions for insurance underwriter. And I was like, yes, I will do anything. And I did underwriting for like 6 months, and I was like, this is soul sucking. I can't do this. And then I went out with the safety team one day, and I was like, can you guys hire me?
Yeah.
And so they did, and they like trained me on how to do it. And I would travel the country doing these like safety inspections. And while I was there, I would find an open mic in every city that I was in.
Oh, good for you.
It was really great because I got really close. Like, I was doing comedy for like 2 years in Cincinnati. And I'm like, I think I'm doing okay. And then I would go to like DC, and I remember I did this room in DC, and I went out and I did 5 minutes, and every DC comic was, I mean, I hate to sound braggy, but they were like, holy shit, that was amazing. Like, because they had never heard my stuff before.
Yeah.
And there's that saying, like, you get love from home last or something. And that's how I was like, really, you need to go other places to be like, does this work here? Like, you guys have never heard this stuff. Does it work? And it did. And I was like, oh, thank God. And DC, Baltimore, like Philly, I would go to like all the time to do stuff. And then I would go back to Cincinnati and be like,
that's super cool.
Like, I'm well traveled. And then so started picking up from there. But getting into a comedy club is like this puzzle that you have to figure out.
Yeah.
Like, you have to like find the email, which is never on the website. You have to like have a recommendation. You have to like have a good tape. you have to like constantly email them. Like you're selling yourself to these people, like, hey, hire me, hire me, hire me.
Cause yeah.
Most people don't have managers. So you're just like sending out stuff like, do you guys like hire me, hire me, hire me. And it's like almost like, I don't know, like degrading yourself. You're just like, sent 10 emails today, won't hear back. And crazy.
Well, I mean, like, that's the hustle. That's the hustle
right there. Yeah, you have to do all this work behind the scenes. And then you're like...
Okay, so this is like the hustle. So doing, I mean, props to you. That's the hard part. It's like, that's the hard part of to be, like showbiz and entertainment. Like, you have to be your biggest champion. You have to slut yourself out a whole bunch.
And there's like a quid pro quo. Like, hey, you don't want to ask somebody, like, how do you get this? How do you get booked at this place? Unless you have a good relationship with them. Because it's such an asshole move to be like, hi, I don't know you. Can I have the email contact for this person?
Yeah.
Because you have to, like... If someone's going to give you an email contact, they're putting their name attached to, like...
Whatever you're doing.
So you're like, you have to really ask people who are going to be advocates for you. And then again, you want to, like, reach your hand behind you and help the next person, too.
Yeah.
Getting somewhere. Well, at least you should if you're a nice person. So it's, like, very political, very much a game of, like, networking and, like...
Did you ever feel like you needed to move? Like, when I went to L.A., to do comedy, I...
Wait, you went to LA specifically for comedy?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was living in Colorado, and I've told the story like 15 times on this podcast, so sorry everybody who's listening again.
My first time hearing it, though.
So I received an artist grant from the town that I was living in, and it was to do comedy. So I was given money to go do comedy specifically and do like a project, within like the parameters of the grant, and then... I had like done Second City and stuff. So then I was doing that and I realized while I was there, like the hustle of becoming an actual comedian, I was like, I don't think I want to become a comedian. Like,
yeah.
I'm so glad that I went and I learned that
because
it's something that I've always been like, yo, I'm good at this. I like it. Like I should do it more. But I'm just like, I really can't go through what you went through of like, and I don't come from any money. And I was like, I got to be broke as shit, hang out in comedy clubs all day long, work 20 hours a day.
And
I was like,
it's not glamorous.
It's really not at all. And I was like, I honestly, no, I don't want it as much as I thought I did. And it's freeing to admit that now.
No,
it took me a long time to be like, yo, mad props to everyone who does it.
I've gone back and forth. I've been like, I remember doing this festival. It was Laughing Skull in Atlanta. And they had a panel on there that go, everybody come to our panel. It's about when you should move to LA or New York and which one to choose. And I like raised my hand. I was like, what if you don't want to go to either? They're like, then what the fuck are you even doing? And I was like,
I think it depends on like what you want. Like, do you want a Netflix special or do you want it to be something fun you do and you still live in your life now?
It's very different because like you have to like... For me, I'm a very practical thinker as well. And I was like, why would I go to LA and pay rent when I want to work the clubs that are in the mid, like 90% of the clubs in the country are like in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Indiana, like Ohio, Michigan, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Illinois have like tons of comedy clubs as opposed to there's a Funny Bone in Nebraska, Iowa. And then like even in LA, there's, you know, the Comedy Store and the there's places that are, you have to be like a huge headliner to get in.
Yeah.
And they have like, you have to pay to be on the open mics at some of these places.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, is the goal to be a working comic making money where you want to go to the clubs? Or do you want to like bypass all that and try and do it a different way? Like even Taylor Tomlinson, who has a Netflix special, still works clubs. She just did the Funny Bone. They had to add extra shows for her to be on. So you're still paying to live there, but you're flying out to places like this. And granted, you are making money and stuff. Maybe LA is the place you want to be, but I don't know. I feel like there are paths to many things. Like Chad Daniels lives in Michigan. John Heffron lives in Michigan. You know, Theo Von just moved to Nashville. Joe Rogan lives in Texas. So there's like now there's like people are accepting like you can be other places.
Do you think that
I am just like Joe Rogan. Just so you guys know, I'm the Joe Rogan of such
Well, do you think that 2020 really kind of solidified that for everyone? Like, obviously, that's been happening for a long time with technology, like kind of going to where like no one lives in LA anymore in business. Like, you don't have to. No one shoots there anymore. No one does anything.
Yeah.
But like now people are like, yo, we're not leaving our homes. We can't. And everyone's still getting successful and getting work.
Right. And I think people like had to like do this huge shift of like, I gotta make a Zoom show now, or like, we gotta make, I think Nowhere Comedy Club started, which is an online comedy club now.
Okay, yeah. Tell me, how do you feel about doing online comedy?
Oh, it's terrible.
It's the worst. Nobody likes it.
Everybody hates it.
And nobody likes watching it.
No.
Like, why are these? But I'm like, if you're fun, right?
I can see people checking their phones like while I'm talking, and I just have those. Like, try and make eye contact with the next person on the screen. It's the worst.
Right? Because it's like, okay, watching a video is very different than receiving live comedy via Zoom.
You got to be, even like a comedy club that's not set up right can be a disaster. Like, you want the dim light, the low ceilings. I don't want to see everybody in the audience. I don't want to see you eating, because that's going to distract the hell out of me.
Yeah.
And then you're not going to get a good show. And like, you just want to be able to see the first 8 people up front. So, you know, you can comment on them if you want to. And that's it. And you want good lighting, and you want good sound and good acoustics. And like, that's it.
Oh, gosh. Well, so now, like, moving forward in your world a little bit, like, do you want to continue to do? So, like, what do you, can I ask you? Yeah. Lifelong, this is the Jesus talk. God. So, like, what do you want? Do you want to be, like, a super crazy, successful comedian who also eventually dips into acting and gets their own skincare line?
Oh, my
or?
God, yeah. I brought my own vision board, so if we can just refer to that. I am at the point where, and then I'm just turned 35, so.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Well, this is the part of your life where people are just like, what are you doing? Are you going to have a baby? Are you going to, like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like, you need to make these choices now. And I'm like, I'm still a kid. Like, I just feel so not looking at the future. Like, I'm trying to live in the now as much as I can, because as this year has taught us, like, anything can change in a moment. So like, what actually is making me happy? I would love to, like, get a Netflix special or something, you know. Like, can I manifest that? Can we just say that out there? Yes. Who wouldn't want some of that stuff?
All right, yes, to be honest, they pass them out like hotcakes now. It can't be that freaking hard
anymore.
I know,
guys.
Okay, that is, like, not true. But honestly, so many people have Netflix specials, and so many of them suck. Tell me your opinion on men comedians versus female comedians.
Oh, my goodness. Well, there are great comedians in both genders, and there are terrible comedians in both genders. I do still feel, as a woman, like, I looked at a comedy club. There's this comedy club that I go to all the time that has not had a female headliner since October.
What?
Yeah. And I look through their calendar, and I look through their Instagram constantly, and I just want to strangle them and be like, you can't find one. Not one.
Oh,
you
my
can't
God.
Find one. We are out here. They are everywhere. That new Netflix or Hulu Hysterical, have you seen that?
No.
It's all about female comics. It's so good, and these women are so funny, and I just feel like there's still such a there's, what is it, 52 weeks in a year?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to double check on that. I was like, 54. Nope, 52. How many? You guys had to do those 2 extra weeks at the end of the year?
You know, yesterday on air, we were talking about Area 51, but we called it Area 52. And then I corrected my co-host and was like, actually, it's 54.
Studio 54. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Which is, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely. I would have done the same thing.
Anyway, continue. 52
no,
weeks in a year.
52 weeks in a year. And you, like, maybe 6 of them will go to a female headliner.
That's,
you know, things, it's just asinine to look at.
That is, I'm not even trying to say that that's a, I'm not going to take that personally as a woman, but whoever their booking agent is, or whoever does the booking, that's what they're called, whatever, is just dumb, because there's so many really talented, hilarious comedians.
Many. And I'll tell you this, though. I do book some shows. So I have some local rooms that I like to book or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Men will ask, hey, can I do your show? When can I do your show? I would like to do your show. Women do not ask as much. I don't think I've had a woman reach out to me and say, I want to do your show, unless she's coming from out of town. And was like, hey, I trust you to tell me which shows are good. Because I know you're not a predator. So women will reach out to each other, like, in different scenes. Like, I'm in this Facebook group with a lot of LA comics that are women, and we're always looking out for each other. Hey, there's this opportunity here, there. And there's also a female comics Midwest group, all looking out for each other. But when I go to book a show, I have you know, inboxes. I hate calling it inboxes. Sorry, that's like my pet peeve. I'm like, why do you call it an inbox, you
idiot?
Does
it make
idiot?
You think of the vagina?
You idiot.
Is that what you're talking
in
about?
In my box.
Yeah.
I have them in my box
Baring
trying
beavers?
To get into this show. Okay. And yeah, women, we need to fucking ask for shit.
You know what, though? I mean, that's, yes, very yeah. true and hard. I would say I'm 35 as well.
Uh-huh.
And not until 2020 in the resiliency that I've had to, like, I had to go through
mm-hmm.
in order to like continue life, did I really feel empowered to ask for what I want
yeah.
and to make stronger strides. I mean, I do feel that like lack of confidence is the main reason why I didn't continue as a comedian. So I was like, I gotta ask for all this shit and do all this stuff. Like,
yeah.
I can't do it. And in LA,
it's hard.
And I was like, and I kind of freaked out a lot and was like, I can't do this.
No, it's intimidating too.
It's very intimidating.
You feel stupid because what if they say no? And they might say no, but like you'll never know unless they might say yes. They might say yes, girls.
Right?
Girls, listen.
Just ask for it. But I feel like a yeah. lot with women more than men, we're like, I don't want to be a bitch.
I don't want to be pushy.
I don't want to be, right?
Bossy. A bitch. Yes, mm-hmm. exactly. We have that stigma of like we have to be a certain way.
But I must say to everyone,
yeah,
the more you step into asking for what you want, the more your life, just the better and better your life gets.
Yes.
And I do think, though, that there's a finesse. I was just talking about this with the guys we were talking, that we're mutual friends we
yeah.
have in common. We were talking about this last night about how, but women, we have to finesse it
mm-hmm.
because you still will get blackballed as being a bitch and then someone will shut you down and be like, oh, no, nobody likes her. She's a freaking bitch. You know, like
yeah.
you still have that element that not ever, that I feel like men don't really experience.
Yeah.
But like you have to finesse it. And I'm like, women have got to like, that maybe just be how it is because of human nature.
Yeah.
But like, ask what you want, but like, you gotta fucking for it. Like,
yeah,
it's possible.
You gotta like throw a funny twist on it or
yeah.
like when you're typing a message or like, how many exclamation points can I, like, even like, do I send an emoji? Like, you have to overthink it. Like, hey, I really want this. I'm not that serious and I'm
yeah.
not gonna hate you if you don't give it to me. But seriously, can I have it? Like, you
yeah.
don't wanna sound either desperate or bitchy or like pompous or asking for, you know.
I know. I feel like, whenever I see other women, especially
yeah.
doing this and coming with an organized spreadsheet of this is how many things I've done, these are my accomplishments,
yep.
this is how many views I've gotten, this is how much blah, 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 blah. Like, I deserve this.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I see that, I always get incredibly jealous and like, just jealous immediately. I'm like, oh, I should be doing that. Oh my God. What? And envious of like, and also it's like jealousy, envy, and you're a piece of shit because you're not doing this. Like all at the same
time.
I
think that's human nature for everybody. Like
yeah.
to compare a little bit and be like, I use age as like this litmus to like, she's 4 years younger than me and look at all she's done. I was like, well, no one's had a linear journey. Like she's also, you know, they might have, you know, a better upbringing or both parents or like,
yeah.
you know, there's always like, they might know somebody that you didn't know. Like why? I always use age and I'm always like, I feel washed up at, you know, I'm too old. I should have started when I was 14, like the rest of these people.
I remember like, I felt yeah. more washed up at 23 than I do now. But also at 23, I don't think I'd really accomplished as much
yeah.
as I have now. But at 23, I was like,
entertainment, you're supposed to start when you're 16.
I know.
Too fat. It's never going to work.
Oh, my God.
It's over.
Yeah,
oh my God,
and you
oh
compare yourself and how you look, too. Which
yes.
is also, like, if you see a beautiful person, they're also very accomplished. You're like, save some for the rest of us.
I know. You are very, very beautiful,
oh, well, thank
Kelly.
Thank you. But
and it's never how it seems. You know, I interviewed Sia last year,
mm-hmm.
and she, I mean, is in like the, I mean, she, whether you realize it or not, she's one of the most accomplished musicians in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like was never that big of a fan
mm-hmm.
until I was like, they were like, you're going to interview Sia in 2 hours. And I was like, what, that chick? All right, fine.
I what love if, her.
I didn't say it like that.
Yeah.
But I was
but
like,
you were like, I don't know.
I was like,
yeah.
I don't know anything about her. I'm not a fan
mm-hmm.
On my own. So then I did so much research and I was like, I have been missing out on one of the biggest phenomena in the world for a long time.
I know. You were like, how did I graze past this one? It was the bodysuits. It was the children dancing in the bodysuits. You just were like, not me.
No,
I will not participate.
Honestly, I saw her perform at mm-hmm. a music festival in 2010
mm-hmm.
and I didn't like her. And I saw her at but that was before she blew up. Her music was way different then. And then I saw her at LAX after that and she was really nice, but like not. And I was like, so then so I never really followed her career. But then anyway, hold on. The point is,
comparison.
She spoke volumes about this and she was like, she said when she got sober when she was like, but through that journey is when I finally like, kind of just like got by the wayside of mm-hmm. those feelings we're talking about now. She's like, and then everything just took off. And she was like, I just like followed my gut more. Mm-hmm. And that sounds so easy and so simple. And so like, duh, that's what everybody says. But she is like absolute proof. She was like, I was living in all this, just comparing all this stuff, you know? Yeah. And then at like 30, she mm-hmm. got sober and decided, fuck all that. I'm just going to do this. And then she blew the fuck up.
And she probably had a whole team of people telling her what to wear, what sound to do, what to mm-hmm. look like. And I feel like as soon as you like throw all that garbage away and you're like, I'm comfortable with who I am, you will start to get more stuff because there's going to be nobody else like you. Like, stop trying to be the next Amy Schumer. Don't try and be the next John Mulaney. I see so many people do Mitch Hedberg on stage and I'm like, stop doing that. Just be who you are because they already have that slot to fill. You know, you don't need to be a new replica of a person. You just need to be the only you.
You know, it's crazy how some people do just contrite comedy, especially in the beginning or whatnot. But I must say this to you, if you ever do go to what I experienced going to LA and doing being on the circuit for a little bit, guys. Like, I really don't want to speak.
I just picture it as a tiny train that you got on and you just go from club to club. The circuit,
just like the couple times that I did. Your way, like, there are so many people who are just trying to do Mitch Hedberg, and like when you go and actually do you, mm-hmm. I found every single time I was like, like, there's nobody else actually just doing this. Like, I felt it was so empowering and such a huge confidence boost.
I think one of the times I visited LA, I was with a comedian, Tommy John, again. And I was in this room. It was a small room. I know that they had done shows there. It wasn't like Largo. And I don't know what it was, but I forget what it was. But he goes, you need to watch this girl. You need to watch Allie. Come meet Allie. Hi, Allie. Nice to meet you. And then I see Ali Wong go on stage in a room full of 60 people and just murder the room. And then she was the nicest person when I met her. And this is before her Netflix special, before Baby Cobra, before she blew up.
Yeah.
Seeing her on stage, I'm like, I've never seen anything like that. It's different. She's speaking in her voice. She's not trying to do anybody else. She's not doing Margaret Cho. She's doing whatever her story is, whatever her life journey has been, everything from her lens. And it kind of like clicked for me, and I was like, no one's had my life either. Like, I can tell stuff about my life, and it doesn't have to be relatable to everybody. It just has to be funny. So that was a big like aha moment for me too.
Oh, good for you. And she was Ali Wong. And she's so hilarious.
She was so funny and she's so cute.
But Ali Wong to me is like, she's shattering. Like, she's so funny. Like, she breaks all, she's like above and beyond mm-hmm. everybody. I think she's just always hilarious.
I like I like dark comedy too. Mm-hmm. Like, if someone says the most fucked up thing, that's same. Always, like, same. People talk about like trauma and tragedy and like, I love that stuff because it's if you can make the gallows humor at that time. So like, there's a lot of comics that I follow that do shit like that. Like Adriana Pucci, she does it. A lot of really good women do that now because it's like they come from this dark headspace and it's like relatable to women because we're not supposed to talk about that stuff or think about it, but we do think it in our heads. And so I like stuff like that too.
I can't. Dude, me too. I always feel like the more inappropriate, the more like, did you really just
say that?
The more I'm like, ha ha. But in that regard, it's not about blowjobs or anything. Like, I cannot stand
the over-sexualization.
That's what I don't. I feel like so many female comedians do that. And like, I just check out.
When I went to LA and I did this showcase at Broadway comedy something comedy club, I was one of like 8 female comics on the lineup, and I was like, hell yeah, girls. And I think they were all just actresses that did comedy on the side for like exposure or something, and every single one of them had a sex joke where they acted out something or did a gesture of some sort. And it's not my cup of tea, it's not my humor. I just feel like it's kind of, is that really your experience and your voice and the things that you care about and want to talk about? If it is, that's fine. But don't use it as a crutch. And I could tell it was being used as a crutch because it's like, I'm going to laugh at the joke about balls in your mouth. Ha ha, it's shocking. But
low
it's like
hanging fruit.
Low hanging fruit. Literally the lowest of, ball joke. But It's not my, yeah, it's not my cup of tea, but it's not to say that it can't be done in a funny way. It's just, we're not allowed to do it because it is a crutch. It's like a guy going up and, you know, talking about my mother-in-law or like my dick.
I know. I feel like it's, to me, it's like lazy. I'm like, I'm not trying hard enough. I'm just making some sex joke about, I could tell stories of me doing something hilarious in the, I mean, whatever. Yeah. It's just a shit show of sexual endeavors here. But.
And to be hacky is one of the worst labels you can have in the comedy community. Is like, oh, they're a hack. They just tell low-hanging fruit, hacky premises, jokes that aren't original and stuff like that. So it's harder to get booked on stuff.
You know, on a total whatever, backtracking here. Earlier we were talking about followers and like losing followers. Mm-hmm. I made a really inappropriate Trump China virus joke on my Instagram. I thought it was hilarious. Just snuck it in there and I lost like 45 followers in a day.
Oh wow, and that's
then,
a lot.
And then a bunch of people, like in the I would say maybe around 20, which isn't like a whole lot, but like around 20 people called me racist and were like, are you, and like called me on for it, like, I can't believe you're using your platform for this, blah 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 blah, do you follow, I mean, I was mostly offended that, remember when people call me racist and I thought that I was a Trump supporter and I was like,
no,
what?
Yeah,
but
that
joke
scary.
Was it was scary, but the joke was really funny. It was really inappropriate.
Well, I did my first show at a kind of like a very liberal town. And I usually kill there. And one of the nights, I did a closer that I said, Latino women are hot, was the premise. And they can say things I can't say.
Yeah,
because
you're wearing hoops. Crazy.
Yeah, look at me. and the joke was deprecating me and how I don't have, like, the confidence or charisma to say certain things. And I didn't do anything that I thought was offensive.
Yeah.
And, you know, somebody called the club and said, I was offended by this joke, and they backed me up. They were like, it took her 45 minutes to say one offensive thing to you, and she was trying to deprecate herself. But I took that feedback, and I was like, am I saying, like, I had to, like, internalize. I'm like, am I saying something offensive? Do I like this joke? Is it me? I thought it was just a compliment. Am I perpetuating a stereotype? So, hard.
Yeah, well, hold on. But at the same time, this is why this past year, I got a lot to say about this. Because comedy is offending people. It is making fun of life. Literally making fun of life.
Yes.
So I feel like the levels in which people are getting offended now is like, you're ruining this. This was, how is this not funny anymore? This is still true. That what I just talked about is still happening. But now we're not allowed to talk about it because what? There's a fine line there that I'm like, I don't like the direction it's going in.
I'm afraid to get canceled, honestly. Afraid I'm going to say something that, well, first of all, I don't want anybody to feel like shit. I want people to come to a comedy show and leave happy and feeling good and not like, oh, I can't believe they said that. That hurt my feelings. However, when you go to a comedy show, you have to realize, like, these are jokes through the lens of this person and how they live. And doesn't necessarily mean they're talking about you. I just don't think, like, for me, like, when I see someone punching down, like, if they're making fun of a very unfortunate person, like, punching, do you know what punching down is?
No, but no.
Punching down is, like, when you're higher up looking down. So if I'm punching down at, like, special needs people, if I'm like, oh, special needs people, blah, 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 blah. Those are people who, they're not there to defend themselves. You know what? It's also hacky, low-hanging fruit, punching down. It's just not a good look. It's not something that I would ever want to do. So, like, there's a difference between, like, I can say anything. And it's like, yeah, you can. But should you? And certain things.
Yeah.
But I am afraid of getting, I'm afraid I'm going to slip up and say something stupid.
The example that you just told, like, I'm like, that is out of control.
My heart was in the great place. Yeah. Like, I think the person had gone to my Instagram to even, like, confront me. Because I saw someone checking my stories that was not a follower. And if she would have looked, she looked one page over and saw my donation to the ACLU. Like, the day before, to stop Asian American hate stop Asian hate. So if she, like, looked through my stuff, she was probably like, okay, she didn't mean it. Like, she's probably a good person. But to, like, be that offended enough to call up a club, like, that's That's a lot of like.
Well, because then like what yeah. I think that the damage here
yeah.
is that now in her mind, you're now labeled as something that you're not.
Right.
And you, but also like the premise of comedy
mm-hmm.
is making comparisons and
right.
like and doing, it's like the alt culture of the world. Like I would say like comedians are just spectating everything
mm-hmm.
and making comments on it.
We're the commentators.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like this, I think that's getting lost. And now all of a sudden I'm a bad person because I made a joke about a natural truth that was funny 8 months ago, but now it's not.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's
or even through my lens, like yeah. through my lens, like there are certain people that are like, they can say sexy things. Cause they have confidence. And there's certain people that mm-hmm. like me, I feel awkward saying this thing.
Should we spot when I was like, can I put you in the spotlight? Say something funny right now. Not something funny, something sexy.
No, dude.
And I'm the same
ooh,
way.
Flesh. I don't know.
Yeah, flesh.
Like, that's how awkward I am with the sexual. And that's why I was like,
I love that flesh is the first thing.
Do you see? That is me living my truth of not being able to say sexy things. So I'm not wrong in that that's my experience. But I don't ever want to feel like, I remember the first time I did a joke.
Oh,
I said
God.
The word rape. So the first time I did a joke, it was about mattresses.
Mm-hmm.
But I used the word rape in, it's about a memory foam mattress.
Mm-hmm.
And the joke was, and please don't cancel me because I don't do this joke anymore. This is just a story about learning and growing as a person.
Okay.
The joke was, I'm afraid to be raped because I have a memory foam mattress.
That's really funny.
It's really dark. And I say, I'd be afraid to sleep all the time. And I go on to explain it. The joke is about mattresses, you guys.
That's really funny.
And I was in the women's bathroom. This is a small bar in Columbus. And I start... After my set, I'm in the bathroom, I'm looking in the mirror, and I'm tearing up, and I'm crying. And I was like, what if someone in the audience had been raped? And I start to cry a little bit, and someone comes in, and they say, what's wrong? And I was like, I just feel really bad that I said that. Like, I could have triggered somebody. And this girl, she's washing her hands. She's washing her hands in the thing. She, like, takes the paper towels, you know, off the thing, and she just dries her hands, and she goes, I've been raped, and I thought it was fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you need a person like that to be like, I know your heart wasn't in the wrong place. You were making a joke about mattresses. It was funny. But again, that's the thing that I feel like women should get a pass on with the dark comedy is that this is our trauma. This is stuff that we have to think about constantly. It might not be funny. This is my fucking reality.
Yeah.
I have to. I can't go for a walk in the park without breaking my neck, turning my shoulder 150 times. So you know why you laugh so hard? It's because it's our shared experience of things that we have to fucking think about all the time.
Yes.
Are in a sisterhood of this shared experience of stuff. And it's like... Who am I to judge your joke that you're making about your experience and make it about me? I mean, that's the thing with stuff like that
mm-hmm.
is like, she's just telling her truth and
right?
what it could be offensive to you or triggering, but it's her truth and she's not trying to make light of your situation. She's making light of her own for her own sake. And I don't know.
I know. I just feel that there's humor in everything. You know, we've all been through a lot in life. I'm just like, yo, there's humor in everything. If you use your comedic skills in the
mm-hmm.
right way, you can make people laugh with this experience.
Right. And it's part of like, processing shit. Like I do a lot of jokes about how my dad was a drug dealer. And
he was like, what kind of drugs?
Like pot, like, but like a lot of pot.
Oh, was
like,
he in jail?
Yes. And like,
oh my God, for real?
Yeah. Like he went like he, my dad was the town drug dealer and everybody in the town knew it except for me. And I was walking around like the giant RA narc that has written a lot, like never, like no one can tell her. And so I have all these and people are like, that stuff is so funny. You should tell more stories about that. And I go, I don't know how to make it funny because I haven't processed it yet. So I'm trying that now. It took me a long time to be like, how do I make this funny? Because I'm seeing it through the lens of like, I feel trashy and I feel like judgmental from people. And then I'm like, what are the stories? But that is my truth in my story. And it's like, far be it for anybody to tell me that I couldn't talk about that or like process. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh my God. Now I'm going in so like, other mode of like, we need to talk about this. And we need to break it down so that you can tell these stories that are really hilarious. Because yeah. I don't know anybody else whose dad was a drug dealer growing up and they could tell stories about, like, that's got to be
hilarious. Like, we had a scale in my kitchen. Oh, and my God. Thought my dad was on Weight Watchers. It was from measuring weed. We had a pot plant in our basement in my dad's workshop that I didn't know what pot looked like. I was just like, why does this plant need a lamp? Like, none of mom's plants have lamps. Oh my God. Just like, it's just really stuff that you don't know when you're a kid. And you're like, oh, later. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So I'm still in the O phase, I think, because I'm like, what else did I not re-? Like, my dad told me one time that he hid a baggie of weed in a tissue box. And that I got a cold, so I took the tissue box and I sat in front of the TV, and he was watching me go from tissue to tissue to tissue, and he's like, he just kept walking by the room, like, she's gonna dip her hand in there. The first time I smelled pot, I was at a concert, and I said to the person, to the adult chaperoning me at a Counting Crows concert, I said, it smells like my mom's bathroom in here. What is that? And she's just looking at me, and I'm like, seriously, this is exactly what my mom's bathroom smells like. And so there's so many, like, story, like, yeah, and if someone was like, that's offensive because that's child abuse, I'm like, yeah, it was, but it happened to me, okay? It happened to me. That's my life.
You've got to tell. Do you tell those stories on stage?
I haven't done the tissue box one, but I told the one where I'm like, you know, this guy came up to me and was like, hey, I'm going to come over to your house after school, and he was like this really hot guy, and I remember being like, yeah, you can come over. Like, my parents are out of town. We can do whatever we want. He goes, oh, your dad's not going to be there? No, your dad has to be there. And I remember being like, what the fuck kind of, like, cuckold guy is like, no, I need your dad to be there. So it's like, it's because he wanted pot. Everybody knew this. And I didn't know. I think the whole town made a fucking pact not to tell me.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't find out till my dad was, like, arrested. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's
crazy.
So awesome.
And so I know a lot about drug dealing because I eventually found out, like, because he started being, like, very reckless towards the end. Mm-hmm. And then I did find out before he got arrested because he would have, like, piles of pot sitting on. He just didn't give a fuck after a while. And people would come into the house and buy weed. And he'd be like, you got to stay. You got to stay and talk to me for 30 minutes because I can't have people walking in and out of the house for 2 seconds at a time. Mm. So we'd have, like, these skeezy people just hanging out in my kitchen, like, sup. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get a snack and go do my homework. And, like, I had to learn about, like, oh, someone could be watching the house. So, like, you have to make your visit, like, 30 minutes or more. And these people were so uncomfortable. They're like, I don't want to fucking talk to you. And he's like, yeah. I don't want to talk to you either, but you got to stay. And it's just like this weird, like, our house got broken into and a bunch of stuff got stolen. And I'm like, Dad, like, a bunch of stuff got stolen from my room. He's like, we can't call the cop. What are we going to say? My weed got stolen? A bunch of my money and my safe got, like, we couldn't do anything. And I'm like, oh man, this is crazy. It's crazy.
Wow. Do you have any siblings?
I have a sister. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, I remember.
You guys are lucky that, no, nothing ever happened to you young, pretty girls while that was happening.
We were like, and it was like this middle class house at the end of a cul-de-sac. Like, you wouldn't think, like, my dad was so reckless. And this is all on record, so I feel okay talking about it.
What kind of car did he drive?
probably something. I entered him in the shitty car contest one time. Well, you know that, like, one of the radio stations was like, bring your shitty car. Like, his seat was missing out of the back, and it was rusted through, and I had to ride, like, on the roof or whatever. Like, shittiest car. So it wasn't, like, a nice.
You're just going to pass that by and be like, I had to ride on the roof, whatever. Yeah. No big deal.
Well, I think people think, like, drug dealer, you're like, yeah, you probably had a cool SUV. No.
I was like, do you have an Impala or something?
No,
like,
what? It was Impala balling for sure. the house got broken into, and I remember there was a sneaker footprint for, like, a Converse sneaker on, like, some part of the roof that he had, like, analyzed, and he was like, who do you know that wears size whatever Converse? I'm like, we're never going to, like, where's Waldo, this person who did this? Like, you either got to, I don't know. It was just such a weird experience.
Whoa.
I feel like I just went down a rabbit hole. Sorry.
It was amazing. Now I'm like,
we went from
I was going to say goodbye, but now I'm like, now we're just getting going here.
Yeah. Sorry, guys.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Yeah. So, like, personal, I feel like people respond to either broad observations that they've made themselves on stage and be like, yes, I've always thought that, or very personal story specific to you that only you could tell. People mm-hmm. are like, that's hilarious.
Yeah, I the last time I did comedy, mm-hmm. I've done stand-up once since I've been home in Cincinnati, and I totally bombed. Like, totally bombed.
Where was it at?
The Drinkery.
Okay.
And I just, like, they gave me a spot because they came on the show.
Fun.
And I hadn't done stand-up in like a year.
You're always welcome to come on anything I'm doing, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I would love to watch.
I always think about it, but I haven't done comedy in so long, and I don't feel confident in my comedic skills anymore.
Oh, so you're just like up there with the rest of us.
Yeah.
None of us do.
I'm just like, I don't know what I'd say. And the last two times I was on stage, I really bombed. So that time was like 5 minutes, and I completely bombed, and it was embarrassing. And then it was the first time my baby brother saw me.
Oh, so, I hate when people.
Whatever. But I did an hour-long special before that, mm-hmm. per the arts grant. I had to go back to Telluride and like do an hour long special and blah, blah, blah. So
hour's a long time.
It is a long time. Yeah. But like, there was one time in my life where an hour long special to me was like a dream.
Oh yeah.
I was like, I have an hour to just slay and write this. Oh my God.
I have a captive audience that has to listen to me.
And
yes.
I was like, I'm going to get juicy with this. Mm-hmm. No, I started writing that whole bit like the night before. Like, I had no idea what I was doing. And so, but I had so much material, but I didn't know how to make it funny because I was still super wounded from it.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's all really funny, but my delivery was, people were just like afterwards, one of my best friend, I've not said that so many times, but a girl who was there was a good friend and very honest. That's why I was like, I need you to tell me. You need to tell me mm-hmm. how that was. She was like, girl, no. Like, she was like, you said all this stuff that was just really vulnerable mm-hmm. and hold on, I don't know where I'm getting on.
She's like, you need the punchline in
yeah.
there.
Yeah. She was like, anyway, but yeah, so the point of this is, an hour long of me just telling stories that were really kind of like gut wrenching, but I hadn't made them funny yet. And
yeah.
I know that there's a lot of hilarity in there, but
it's just, you have to keep doing it on stage. Cause then as soon as like, if it's not hitting, you're just like, you make a one-off comment and people laugh at that. You're like, okay, there was a joke in there. Like
yeah.
you have to like sit with it for a really long time, especially with the heavy stuff. Like I have a lot of people whose like parents died, and they go up and do jokes about it, and those are my favorite jokes, because you
yeah.
can tell it was like the deepest, darkest part of their life, and they were just reaching for the humor in it. And when you can find something funny in that dark shit, ugh, chef's kiss.
Right?
It was so good. Yeah.
Oh man. Well, you know what?
It's a good place. We feel good.
I know.
Yeah.
You want to come back and just you're only allowed to tell stories about growing up with a drug dealer as a dad?
I think like change this to a therapy appointment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This can just be prep for when
yeah.
you eventually take that
yeah.
tour.
There was a stripper who stole my swimsuit.
What?
To go in a hot tub, our hot tub. I lost all my swimsuits to a stripper in our hot tub. My 16-year-old little tiny swimsuits. She took them all. I have stories.
She must have been a hot stripper.
She deserved it. She just take them from the child.
See? And with that, we'll see you next week. Okay?
Yeah.
We'll see you later.
Sounds good.
Thank you very much, Kelly Collette. And also, where can people find you?
KellyColletteComedy.com is and follow me on Instagram, because apparently we just lose them.
Losing
them.
Mm-mm-mm.
Please validate me.
Yes. And all the bots, you're welcome to. Please come. So you have a couple different Instagram accounts, because Kelly, you didn't get into it, but she also is your, I love your art.
Thank you. I just started.
I love your painting.
Just started posting about that because I was very vulnerable and I was like, I don't know if this is good. And now I'm like, just throw it out there.
It is so good. I
want to
buy
you.
A couple pieces. Honestly,
yay!
That's like my favorite kind of art. We'll talk about that later. But so Kelly Collette, what I'm saying.
Kelly Collette is the main account, and then Kelly.canvas is the art.
All right.
Yeah.
There you go, y'all. Get up all on Kelly.
Oh, my God. Please don't do that.
Well, no, I was going to make some sort of joke there. So I was never mind. I'm going to cut that out.
I got a lot of security on me now. Yeah. So.
Well, again, if you like what you heard about Kelly Collette, don't you want to hear more stories about growing up in a household where your dad was a drug dealer and now you talk about it for a living? All my comedy people, I mean, she's going to come back. Kelly Collette is great. Good friend. Good baby girl. Remember, you can find her www.kellycollettecomedy.com. She's on Instagram at Kelly Collette. And her Instagram, let's see, for the canvas is kelly.canvas. Check out her artwork. Go check out her comedy. She's on tour. She is phenomenal. Love her so much. Thank you so much, Kelly. We'll talk to you soon. All right, guys. Like, subscribe, do all those things. Have a fantastic freaking day, week, month, year. Whatever it is you do today, make yourself proud. I thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening. And y'all change my world. I hope you are changing yours and vice versa and all that goodness. If it's uncomfortable, that means you're doing the right thing. Ah! All right, bye, guys. Love you. Okay, bye.